Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
So, 7 o'clock into the sunset. Time of night with the light and the sky clearing up, so the sunset is going to be an issue down towards turn 17, down towards turn 7 in front of the hotel, the Hairpin as well. This is when, if you've just been into the pits or you're coming into the pits in the next half an hour or 40 minutes, which many of them will be, you want a clean windscreen, Nick Damon, for the next part of this race. You don't want grimy, oily, dirty flies and all of that on your windscreen when you get to this time of day.
Now, this is what you've saved your tear off for, isn't it? This is why you've waited this long and peered through a smeary mess, because you know, well, they'll rip off a tear off and I'll be able to see for the next 10 or 15 minutes. It really is incredibly bright. It is absolutely the setting sun going down to unsurprisingly Sunset Bend and the Hairpin Turn. Sunset Bend is a little bit worse because as you approach it at so much higher speed, whereas of course with
and also there's nothing in front of you. There is a little bit of tree cover at turn 7, so you don't have to deal with it for quite as long. You've got the hotel there as well, which gives you a little bit of cover. So yeah, it's going to be a rough little while. Shadows really lengthening. That cloud that was bubbling up earlier on has blown away. Still in the distance, a bit of threatening cloud that looks rather darker than I would like to see. Just over 3 hours still to go. New fastest lap in GT Le Mans for Matt Campbell. Not just for him, not just for the car. That is a fastest GT Le Mans lap by a privateer Porsche. And Matt Campbell, the Antipodean sensation Porsche junior driver in the WeatherTech Racing 79. Well, he's had to find this time, Nick, because he's only 6/10 of a second away from Philipp Eng in second place.
Well, it's certainly not only is it a sunset hour, it's a bit of a golden hour, because we've also seen fastest laps from Antonio Farfus as well, and some very quick stuff from Philipp Eng. So everyone apart from Nicky Katzberg, who's still kind of suffering the after effects of that spin following the last yellow flags area, is a little bit slid. I must make my record say that the fastest GTLM race prior to this was actually Nicky Katzberg with the 57.0. So he's taken over a second off the best ever. And I think it's tantamount the fact that the track's in really, really good condition with excellent grip and a really good temperature for fast time. So whilst they are staring into the sun, at least they've got some grip to get the thing around the corner when they just pitch in and hope.
I'm told by Brian Dawkins, who's used the hashtag RSL Sebring at IMSA Radio, Super GT has a penalty termed morally hazardous for the kind of overly aggressive driving that you were talking about earlier on. I really like that, Brian. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Morally hazardous penalty.
Rather than having, you know, like Beau Barfield, you have Mary Whitehouse in the stewards' room.
Presumably only for stuff that happens on the track. Otherwise, there'd be all kinds of potential there.
You don't want Mary Whitehouse in the racing car paddock, absolutely not. But yeah, but for morally reprehensible driving, she'd be absolutely up there with her twin set and pearls and waving a little finger at the bad boys.
Don't forget, we'll be breaking down what we've seen across the whole of the Mobile One Sebring 12 hours in Michelin Post Race Tech after the checkered flag. Try and get some driver interviews into that, answer your questions as well. It is the show where editorially it's driven by you. Hashtag Michelin PRT to at IMSA Radio, please. If you've got a question that you want answering from what you've seen, if you've seen something that you'd like to comment on, points arising from the race in just over 3 hours' time, hashtag Michelin PRT at IMSA Radio. And while we're talking about the headline makers here, as I'm sure we will be in Michelin Post Race Tech, it is Haggerty Inside Track on Tuesday. That's at 1 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock UK, on the Haggerty community channels at haggerty.com. Envision three guests being lined up even as we speak. Definitely got somebody from Rahal Letterman Lanigan. Hopefully it's going to be the president of racing operations, Piers Phillips, in that.
Winning in Newcastle Dome.
No, we won't be mentioning that. Absolutely not, because I'll upset him and then he'll upset me and nobody will understand what we're talking about because we'll end up talking too quickly to each other. So that's on Tuesday. Haggerty.com via the community pages. Look for the live events and join us then. 1 o'clock Eastern. Get your lunch break in at the right time. That's 5 o'clock still in the UK because the clocks still haven't changed in the rest of the world. Shea Adam. Update me on the evolution of the track surface here. What are the drivers telling you?
Nick was completely spot on. The track has so much grip on it. And part of that stems from the fact that we've had more Michelin rubber laid down this weekend than we normally do. With the new Carrera Cup North America running on Michelins, that gave us an additional 35-ish cars twice in their races, as well as the Michelin Pilot Challenge runners, of which we had 35. And now this field of 37 cars out around the track, plus you add in a very rare thing for Florida, we haven't had rain. The track is very grippy and the times are going to continue to fall as the temperature drops too. It's already down to 66 degrees in the air. We're going to lose at least another 10 before this race is over.
Yeah, air temp 18 Celsius. Track temp exactly the same, so it's got to be what's that, about 50, about 60?
4, isn't it? So 20 is 68.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, absolutely. In the leader, drops out Harry Tinknell, out of the lead. Through has gone Kevin Magnussen for another lead change. Shea Adam.
Fuel and tires for Harry Tinknell as the Multimatic crew goes to work. They are remaining to change the left rear. Now that wheel has been on, so the car can be dropped off the air jacks. They're giving Harry a new drinks bottle as well. This team tested here the first race, the first week of January. So they did get quite a bit of time out around the track in conditions that were cool. Car was fast then. Well, the car is fast tonight.
Yeah, and of course, as we go into the evening and the night, as you rightly say, Shane, we're going to see even further temperature drops. Now, there is a point where normally the cooler it is, the more the tyres love it, up to a point where it gets too cold and they start losing heat and they start losing grip. So it'd be interesting to see where that crossover point comes. Likely, to be honest, there's still plenty more to be got out of these cars and more drive from them. And it's interesting, there's not a huge amount of marbling. You look at the outside, look at the some of the corners where you might think there'd be a lot of detritus on the outside. It's not looking too bad. We don't seem to have got down to a single line just yet as the Sirius XM Acura goes around the Le Mans curve and down the Ullman straight before they'll be straight into the sunset. It's going to get lower and lower and lower. It's going to get an awful lot worse in the next half an hour. You stare right into the setting sun before the aptly named sunset bend, 17 and 18. Watch out for the bumps. They'll bite you. They did, of course, Jimmy Johnson in qualifying. He found himself backing into the path of traffic. And then, of course, the other time he spun around as well. So he got in both ways, actually, during the course of this event. And then turn one, rip the thing in at about 160, 170 miles an hour, break down two gears, and then up and out, trying not to go out too wide. And you come into the very complex 345, and we have the Ally Cadillac in shape.
That is Jimmy Johnson bringing the car in. He's going to stay in the pit lane. I saw Simon Pagenaud's red helmet up on the wall. He does the same design, but he does sometimes change the color. And when he runs under the yellow color, friends and I tend to call him Pikachu because he is lightning fast. But the Ally Cadillac comes in, hits its marks, fuel, tires, And there we go, with the door opening up so that Jimmy Johnson can get some sweet freedom and fresh air. And Simon Pagenaud can climb aboard and do what he does best. I'm sure Norman's at home cheering you on too, Simon, his little puppy dog. Fuel tires, are they going to do a windshield tear-off? This is the time of day when you want to save those windshield tear-offs because visibility is at a premium. Had a little bit of trouble getting Simon fully strapped in and tethered to the car. The fuel nozzle's been it has been detached for several moments now before Simon actually gets going once again. Came in from the third position. Let's see where he cycles back out to.
Coming down to complete another race hour and head into the 10th hour of racing. Just over 3 hours still to go then. Pagenaud, as reported, stays behind the wheel of that number 48. Listening to IMSA Radio, it's live coverage of the 69th annual Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring with Nick Damon and Shea Adam and me, John Hindhoff. Nick, go ahead.
We just need a change of position. That was a change for second and third in GTD.
Thank you.
Just right behind the Yellow Cadillac, and it was actually Jan Hyland, the Wright Motorsports car, going past Madison Snow in the Lamborghini. So himself up quite nicely there in that little 3-4-5 section. You have to be slightly helped by the person being overtaken because they can be a little bit unwieldy, but we still have 3 hours to go and there's many fights we made between those cars, and really just staying close is what counts now and unleashing yourself once you actually are being lit just by your headlights and by nothing else.
Magnussen got to be due in sometime soon from the front of the field. A little bit of yellow in his stint here as we're beginning to get the beautiful golden light. There are a couple of extra lighting towers down the back straight, I'm told, this year. Those Musso tires, towers, Musco tires for the lighting. Magnussen with 1.8 seconds on Montoya. Montoya has been out one lap fewer since his last fuel stop than Magnussen. Matt Campbell half a second ahead of Philippe Eng, who's 1 second ahead of his teammate Augusto Farfus. White Porsche, red BMW, black BMW. That's your top three in GT Le Mans. Great drive by Matt Campbell, but we knew this. A new fastest lap in LMP2 for Scott Huffaker, leading the category for PR1 Matheson Motorsport. 148.5. Pit lane speed violation, by the way. For the 83? Good, yeah.
Nice.
Right, okay, well, it's there. And Magnussen's come in, Shea. So, obviously, listening to us on 99.1 WWOJ.
And I know that Mom mentioned earlier, so I'll say it again. Scott Dixon is in the car, your new favorite race car driver, Mom, or second favorite, I think is what she told me earlier, to try and save face. Not sure if she was talking about Dad or somebody else, but still, what are those situations? Scott Dixon getting back in for his second go behind wheel, this 01 Cadillac from Chip Ganassi Racing. Beautiful stop, fuel tires, and the driver change all completed well before the fuel probe was detached. I love it.
Yeah, perfectly run. That's Ray on turn one camera. Ray Wenzel Jr. That is one of the iconic shots in motor racing. Looking back from turn one towards the setting sun. A little bit of clouds in over to the east of the circuit, but it has really cleared off very nicely indeed. With the lack of cloud cover, however, when the sun does go down, the temperature you would expect to go down a wee bit quicker. So many places on this track where the sun's in your eyes that you don't think. Coming out of three into four and five, and then all the way through Big Bend down towards the hotel, which is exactly where Scott Dixon is now. Turns in to the hairpin and round it.
I
Then the sun. Sorry, Nick. Go ahead.
No, the only question I have is you keep referring to Big Bend. It's Gurney Bend and has been since 2002. Poor old Dan gets a call named after him. No one uses the name.
Yeah, true. Christensen Bend is turn three as well. Of course, let's not forget more pit stops. Shea Adam.
Christensen Corner, isn't it?
Christensen Corner.
Juan Pablo Montoya. Yeah. Juan Pablo Montoya is out, and you scared the living bejesus out of him at that corner, if memory serves correct.
I did.
It is Olivia getting back into the pink and black Acura out on the racetrack. Had a little bit of issue trying to squish himself back down into the seat, though. That's not something that you normally see with Olivier. Very svelte guy as he's now being strapped into the car. The fuel nozzle is still attached. The tire change is done. Fuel nozzle is out. The door was up for about a second longer than it should have been. So there was a slight amount of time lost on that pit stop. But at the end of the day, it's not as bad as it could have been. The bright side.
It never ceases to amaze me how calm those pit stops are. There are so many moving parts to getting a pit stop, even just changing the tyres, but putting the fuel in as well on the pit lane. Never mind then adding in the complexity at various times of changing a driver. Oh, now a bit of side-by-side action here. This is the 0-1 car going into Christensen Corner, and Scott Dixon passing a couple of other cars. It was the Liquid Moly Turner Motorsport BMW, and I think that might have been one of the LMP2 cars, was it? That blue front
yes,
the time?
Yeah.
Era.
That was the Era car. And so three car classes together, and Scott Dixon was hustling his way through there in an attempt to keep the gap between he and Harry Tinknell in third down as low as possible. It's about 6 seconds at the moment. Actually, that's going to translate into second, actually, isn't it?
Albuquerque owns the pits, isn't it?
Philippe Albuquerque is due in 16. Why did they come in? That was the... He's due in any time now. He's due in any time now because he had the drive-through in this session. So he's done 16 since the drive-through, 7 before that, which had some yellow in it, if memory serves. So he must be close. Shea Adam, LMP3 leader, has been in to the pit. Scott Andrews had a lap on the field, but Blakemolen's gone into the lead here. What's going on?
I genuinely don't know what's going on with that team. They haven't texted me back yet, but Scott Andrews was in the pit lane for a very long time. He stayed aboard that number 74 for Riley. He's actually dropped down to third now. Let me do some investigating and get back.
32 laps on that last stint, which is long, but again, middle part of it had half a dozen that were behind the Corvette safety car. Let's get back to the GT Le Mans battle. How I am going to miss this class of car in IMSA competition. No, we haven't had a huge entry here, but there are three of them battling it out. No GT Le Mans cars next year. If you missed the story on Sportscar 365 earlier in the week, it appears that Corvette are prioritising getting into the WEC with those cars next year, where they still will be eligible for a couple of seasons. The quote was they can still go and race against people, and that is a new car. They want to get some value out of it. Completely understood. Not possible to backwards engineer the C8 to full GT3 specification. And reasonably understandably, I think, they are reluctant to build another brand new car with a new GT3 set of regulations just a couple of years away.
If you look at what's happening in WEC and also obviously much more in Le Mans, there is an absolute, plethora of GTE machines. I mean, the AM class is massive at Le Mans, 20-something cars. So there's plenty of cars out there of a number of different chassis manufacturers. It's just that this running them as a manufacturer seems to have fallen out of favour.
They're not cheap cars to run, and no racing cars are cheap car to run. I can't help thinking that with Laura Klausner Wontrup now as head of racing, effectively, for the GM brands in endurance racing and sports cars, there's an opportunity here to have a look at exactly which brand, which platform goes into which category. There's a GT4 Camaro, of course. There's no real GT3 offering at the moment. There's a new LMDH. Does that stay as Cadillac? Or does Corvette go into that and potentially run for the overall victories here in IMSA and at Le Mans and various other races? But I like the idea that the current C8R is going to get a bit more life in the World Championship and at Le Mans and a few more races. Hasn't been seen in Europe yet, of course, because of the circumstances of the last year. Didn't get to go to Le Mans last year. Will debut in Europe at the Spa opening round of the WEC. Let's get back to the lead in that class that we're talking about, GT Le Mans, through turn one. And Matthew Jaminet, the two Matts in that car, Matt Campbell, under extreme pressure from not one now, but two BMWs. I'll keep an eye on that whilst we have a little update on the car that has been leading for such a long time in LMP3. The number 74 Riley Motorsports Ligier now dropped down to third.
Thank you very much to Gar Robinson, who is listening to us on SiriusXM right now. He sent me a text to say the headlights were not working on the car, and I wrote him back and said, yeah, you kind of need those around Sebring, and he just wrote back, yep. So that's why it was such a long stop to try and get that to function again. We've also had two important pit stops in terms of the race so far. Ryan Dial is now back aboard the Era Motorsport number 18. And Philippe Albuquerque did come in and serve that pit stop that you and Nick were just talking about. Him owing, you can check that off the list.
Thank you. Yeah, I had noticed a couple of cars that weren't running with headlights on earlier in the day. And I always think keeping your lights on, even when it's daylight, is not the worst thing to do, because then if you have a problem, you've seen it earlier before you have to. At IMSA Radio, if you'd like to get in touch with us. Hello to Gar Robinson, listening to us on, I think on XM 392 is Gar. You can also find us on Sirius 216 and around the circuit on 99.1 WWOJ. Sirius and XM channels are uninterrupted flag-to-flag coverage, as it is on IMSA Radio RS2 via the player at imsaradio.com. Leading GT Le Mans cars has the leading DPI car, Harry Tinknell, carving his way through. He's driven a few laps in a GT Le Mans car in his time, so we'll understand exactly how those cars are handling, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting point you make, actually, because the more rounded drivers understand the capabilities the cars are overtaking as well as the car they're trying to overtake in. And that can avoid making mistakes. Turn seven, the hairpin. But seriously, it's a point. You have to understand what the car you're trying to get past can actually do. Because if you're asking it to make a move, get out of your way, you're trying to get up the inside of a car that's actually got very good brakes and you can't outbrake it. You need to know that. You need to know where it's safe. You need to know where they can actually see what you're doing, where the visibility is, where you're not in a blind spot. So having experience across multi-levels of the various levels of endurance racing, it must really, really help a driver. You have that, have empathy, I suppose, and also, I suppose, you know the weak spots too.
David Brabham, whose father, Sir Jack Brabham, of course, pushed a car across the line here at Sebring to win a championship. He always used to say he felt that it was almost should be mandatory to get in a GT car before you're allowed to drive a prototype. Marino Franchitti always said that it helped him as well massively. The leader was held up there by the Hart Racing Aston Martin, not deliberately, but it's given the chance down the inside to turn 17 for the red BMW, a chance that is gratefully accepted. No second opportunity required. Porsche going very, very wide towards the outside wall, onto the start, finish straight, and we've got a new leader in GT Le Mans. Matty Campbell just having to lift off at exactly the wrong time, coming through turn 16, the Le Mans bend onto the Alec Ullman straight, the back straight, and that was all that was required by Philippe Eng to take the position. Campbell fights back straight away in the WeatherTech Porsche though, and for a moment I thought he was going to get that done. He's really close to the outside wall on driver's left as he came out of turn 17. Now at the hairpin, still with the second BMW right up the perfectly formed tail of the Porsche 911. Small margins, Nick, that wasn't it. I mean, really, if he'd caught that Aston Martin either a little bit earlier or a little bit later, he wouldn't have had the problem.
Yeah, and that's the both the excitement and the danger of traffic and how it can shape a race, and how you don't have to be just have to be good, you have to be lucky as well. Now the interesting thing is, you see, he went very, very wide coming out of the exit at Sunset, and if you get slightly on the wrong line going round, you end up being a passenger. You have to kind of wait for the car to work out where it's going to bounce itself to before you can actually kind of get the car back pointing where you wanted to do. And certainly, you know, in Campbell's case, he was obviously wanting to also get as much forward momentum as possible. So you just push and push and push and just kind of trust yourself. Right, it's going wide, but it will come back in again before it makes an unpleasant clunk against the concrete wall. Which,
oh, we have Tower Motorsport car off at turn one. This will be a yellow flag immediately. Hard into the tyres on the outside. Driver's right. Front end wiped off. Rear end wiped off. And that has been a very big impact. Fortunately, the biggest part of the impact was into the tyres, but it has gone so far down, it's managed to clear the tyres and has come in to contact with some of the concrete blocks. I'm guessing that's just a drift wide coming through turn one. Didn't see another car involved there. It's Timothy Bure who was behind the wheel of that car. And in second place, already the IMSA safety trucks are there. And already I see the driver is out of the car. Fantastic work by the safety team. That has been a very big incident indeed. Coming through turn one. He's rolled it. It's actually gone all the way over and back onto its wheels. Exactly the same wiggle that Felipe Nasr had when he came into contact with Vautier leaving the pit. Exactly the same wiggle in exactly the same place. Went left, snapped right, but without Vautier there straightening back up again, which is effectively what happened for Nasr, he's gone into the tyre wall and rolled it over back onto its wheels, or what was left of its wheels. The door opened, the safety cell has done its job, and Bure is out of the car, but that was a very, very big incident indeed. Looked like even some of the tyre barriers might have gone over the fence there. Such was the ferocity of the impact. The AMR Cayenne GTS on the scene as well now. Just to reiterate, Timothy Bure out and walking around. And there are some tyres that have made their bid for freedom. Some of the banded tyres over the other side of the wall. Now, what I can't tell you is whether they were there to start with or whether they were flicked there by the car. But that, Nick Damon, was a very big shunt and so reminiscent of what happened to Felipe Nasr on his first flying lap when he hit the Tristan Vautier Mustang sampling Cadillac who was coming out of the pit lane. And do you know what? That was his first flying lap as well. So tyres not up to temperature and pressure.
But I mean, the way it flew off with completely unabated speed, it's almost like you look at it, if you didn't know it was his first lap, you think, is that had a brake failure? Because it just literally speared off the track like it was a breakage. But you say, of course, you're going round, I don't know, what do you turn in at 140 miles an hour, perhaps, in one of those
cars?
At least, 130, yeah.
Yep.
And everything's going great. It snapped bang. Yeah, you're actually back on the power at that point. So you're not going to have any time to actually do anything. You might get your foot off the throttle, but get the other foot on the brake is very unlikely. Instead, you have no retardation. So you actually then just hit the wall at that speed. But
do you know what?
I
remember, there's no tyre warmers, no tyre warming of any kind in IMSA competition. And I just wonder, with these cooler temperatures, it's maybe taking a little bit longer to come up. And I'm not just talking about grip here, Nick. I'm talking about ride height, because it's pressure as well as temperature. And as the temperature comes up, obviously it stiffens the tyre sidewalls and it gives you a little more ride height. And I just wonder, because that was like a carbon copy, an action replay of what happened to Felipe Nasr in the DPI car. All right, I know this is a different class of car, but it is an LMP2 car, which is the same basic chassis. I just wonder if the car is grounding out on a bump that once you get your tyres up to temp, you don't feel on that exit, because it was right in the middle of the road. It wasn't in what I would have normally said was the bumpy part of the exit of turn one.
Yeah, you think of the other thing I'm just wondering is, because we've got so much mechanical grip from the track itself, are drivers getting overconfident too quickly? Mm. So because the track feels so good, they're misunderstanding what the actual grip level is. And they're not taking into account the normal amount of caution you need until you're up to pressure, because you're not sliding, because there's so much, which is the giveaway. Oh, I'm sliding. All right, I've got a bit of a problem. But because there's so much mechanical grip just in the track surface because of the lack of rain and the extra rubber, that they're perhaps getting, you know, bought into too much of a positive feeling about where the car is. But that is absolutely right, John. That's going over something. He's getting a snap either on a bounce or because he's just overloaded the rear tyres, which chemically can't give the grip because they haven't got the heat. Mechanically and aerodynamically, it's fine. There's grip from the track and there's grip from the downforce. But the chemical side, which obviously needs the heat to work, that's what he's not got.
Not quite 45 minutes since the fifth full course caution, this being the sixth. We're still at the moment on course for getting somewhere close to the 3:48 distance record. Shea Adam, you were broadcasting with me at the same time at the time when NASA's incident happened. That absolutely extraordinarily similar, the attitude of the car. All right, no other car involved, but the little bump, wiggle to the right, wiggle to the left, snap to the right, almost like an action replay.
Very, very much so. The thing that's interesting and slightly mystifying is there was some question about the Whelan Engineering, the car, and the structural rigidity of the replaced pieces or the non-replaced pieces on that car from the incident earlier. I believe that this 8 car has also been in the wars as well. It did have some issues earlier on in the weekend. Spent a lot of time behind the wall when there were practice sessions going on. I'm wondering if maybe the bump there at the apex is triggering something, but there is an undeniable symmetry that you just pointed out. First flying lap for both of these cars. Perhaps the driver is trying to extract too much from the tires when they're not ready.
Real testament to how strong the LMP2 mother chassis is, both in DPIs and of course in the LMP2 category. All of the DPIs and even the new LMDHs will be based on one of the four available LMP2 chassis. We've yet to see those new LMP2 designs from the manufacturers, which are the same as they have been. Pits are open, Shea, for the have been open for the prototypes. We were busy making sure everybody was okay, and now open for the GTs as well.
Yeah, and how rude, all these cars sneaking in right past me. Oliver Jarvis is now aboard the 55 Mazda. It's still Simon Pagenaud in the 48 Cadillac. And who else did I see doing driver changes? Oh, for Era, it's still Ryan Dial. They came in and did a splash of fuel and new tires. And Wayne Boyd, same story for the 22 United Autosport. For the GT cars into the pit lane, we've got the 79 Matty Campbell staying aboard fuel tires. And finally, a windshield tear off for that car. Philip Eng is bringing in the 25 BMW. I think he's getting out of that car. Just looking at my chart, I believe. Oh, no, he's only done a single since. They might keep him aboard for a bit longer. Back out and underway for the WeatherTech Ferrari, and it's got a little bit of traffic from the fast Porsche already in the fast lane, who is yielding to the 25 BMW. Oh my goodness, now there is a car on track in between the GTLM leaders. Is it still Eng? Yes, it is. It's still Campbell. The FAF Porsche, which was the first car back off the pit lane, is still Zachary Robichon. And now there is Trent Hinman aboard the Wright Motorsport Porsche, despite the fact that he has already completed his minimum drive time. Ooh, and of note, in GTLM, John Edwards is on the 24 BMW now, and Antonio Garcia is back aboard the number 3 Corvette.
Very close indeed. As those three cars left. Hello to race driver 4401. Loving what you're hearing. That's very kind of you. It's our pleasure. We live to serve. Been listening since minute one, turn 10 at Sebring. Good to know. WWOJ 99.1. Who was that on that tower? Was that Ray Ray? At turn one?
I was looking at my notes.
Of course you were.
Sorry.
It's all right. Where was the place we had the accident when the two cars went in? Turn three. Who's at turn three? It's Buffy at turn three on the tower there. 2 hours and 35 minutes to go. Sirius 216 XM 392 WWOJ 99.1 FM around the circuit. Sun's still got a little way to go before it's right behind the horizon. Nick Damon. Well, let's hang on. Just before I go to you, Nick, Shea Adam is keeping an eye on drive times. I've checked in with our Porsche keys to the race for a wee while. Be there in the dark. Well, that's not that far away. No mistakes. Well, there's been plenty of them, and hardly anybody's been mistake-free. And the tyres. We could have said, never mind getting yourself with some nice sticker sets towards the end, but make sure you warm them up. The Michelin Endurance Championship points are now to be only handed out at the end, but it had seen a little bit of interest there. Watch the watch, Shea, is something I said, and that was all about drive times.
Yes, and although I am not that good that I'm able to have a running clock on each of the 37 cars and each of their three drivers and 111 drivers throughout the course of this field, I have been taking notes. And one car of interest, the 48, I have from the last stops back. Let's go. SP, Simon Pagenaud. SP, Simon Pagenaud. Jimmy Johnson, Jimmy Johnson. Kamui Kobayashi, Kamui Kobayashi. Simon Pagenaud, Simon Pagenaud, Simon Pagenaud. That's five stints within the last nine. It tells me that is a lot of drive time for Mr. Pagenaud. So when the official drive time comes out at the bottom of this racing hour, I'll be able to tell you if he has gone over. But I'm hearing, yep, that is going to be bad.
And what happens then? Remember, that car is only joining us for the Michelin Endurance Cup, the number 48 Cadillac. So what happens then? Does it get excluded? Does it have a penalty applied? Does one of the drivers not get the points? What happens?
So here's the interesting thing. We had this exact situation happen last year at the Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring with the then 48 car, the now one car, Paul Miller Racing. Corey Lewis exceeded drive time. I think it was by about 14 minutes total. What happens is the car is in effect moved to the back of the grid and it is excluded from the final hour tally. But they still scored their Michelin Endurance Cup points that they accrued throughout the course of the race, which actually resulted in them winning the Michelin Endurance Cup. That is interesting when you're in the points as far as the Michelin Endurance Cup goes. Today, the 48 has not scored more than 2 points per segment. They probably will not score more than 2 points unless something happens and they get up to the podium. But they have significantly dropped back as far as the point standings is concerned already, and they look to drop back even further if the results are anything similar to what we're seeing right now on the timing screen.
$5 in the jar for me, by the way, when we were getting all excited at that GT Le Mans lead battle. I think I turned the Stuttgart Stallion into a Maranello trotter. Apologies for that.
But you know the horse on the Ferrari, or on the Porsche logo, does have ties to the Ferrari horse.
I think if I'm right in saying the horse on the Porsche logo comes from the city of Stuttgart's crest. The Ferrari logo allegedly came from a pilot who had it on the side of his plane, I think. I haven't looked that up. I should have, really, before I started that sentence.
I'm going to put this out here to Dave Engelman if he's listening in, because he has told me the story before, and I thought he said that the two were connected. So, Dave, if you're listening, can you please send us a line and just, you know, fill in the blanks?
Is Dave listening?
Good point.
Perhaps they both have ties to Stuttgart, because certainly the horse on the Porsche Shield, which has had a few different iterations down through the years, and actually there's a fascinating, well, for me anyway, fascinating on the internet, if you go on and look it up, and how the colours have slightly changed, the design slightly changed, and therefore if you ever need a replacement badge, you've got to get the one from the right era.
Oh,
and as I had somebody pilfer one from the front of my 968.
Those long winter nights must fly by, John.
They do, absolutely. Thank you to Peter Snowden and Callum Lockey. I got the perfect replacement from the mid-90s for the 968 Sport. And actually, Nick Tandy's guys fitted it for me while I was interviewing Nick one day for another reason altogether. So it was all kept in the motorsport family.
I have a question here. If we're right with our summation, why has Simon Pagenaud stayed on board? Because he actually came into the pits and they could have actually changed him about a lap and a half ago. I'm just wondering, does drive time during yellow flags count? Because five stints is 200 minutes, so he's still got another 40 minutes before he'd be over that level anyway.
Yeah, but it's about how much you've done in the previous 6 hours, Nick.
If you've done five stints in the previous 6 hours, that's 200 minutes, which is 3 hours 20. So it's obviously how much yellow he's putting him over, but they obviously haven't realised this or don't care, because they could have replaced him when they came into the pits 2 laps ago.
That is a fair point. Let's have an update on the hardpoint EBM number 88 Porsche. Shit, Adam?
Bia, as she was getting out of the car and handing over to Catherine Legg, said to the guys on the box, "Be sure to tell Kat the car is coming alive." That 88 Ooh. Porsche with the champion sponsorship on it, it might not be done quite yet. Running in seventh right now, looking to move up a little bit.
Still on the lead lap in class. I think that's the last car on the lead lap in class. Just a note, by the way, the Sun Energy One Mercedes, which has been up and down and had the traction control and ABS problem, I think at one stage it was 4 laps down. It's now back to a single lap off the lead lap, and has been setting some very, very good times, which is very encouraging. Grenier at the wheel of that car at the moment. Can't be too long away from going back to green. Under 2.5 hours to go. And chance. A little bit of brake and tyre warming by the DPIs at the front of the field would suggest to me that we're not a million miles away from going. But in fact, the C8 has disappeared from the front of the field. It's got very dark very quickly in the last few minutes, and the headlights, very effective headlights, are now shining out. It will be Philippe Albuquerque who'll lead them back to green in the Acura number 10. He's on it already, and the green flag is on the air. We'll restart with 2 hours and 27 to go. Scott Dixon in second, Ollie Pla, then Oliver Jarvis in third and fourth, with Simon Pagenaud in fifth position, side by side through turn one. Scott Dixon goes around the outside, and audacious, a superb manoeuvre. What an overtake that was on relatively cold tyres. No fears for the multiple IndyCar champion. And Scott Dixon takes Chip Ganassi's Cadillac number 01 to the lead of the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring on the restart. Brilliant stuff into the pit lane. That must be the Paul Miller Racing number 1 car, because the GRT Lamborghini is not still circulating. Yes, it is. We'll get across that for you in a moment. That is service for that car, and it looks like they may be taking the rear deck off. There was a splash of fuel, but something's not right with that car. It's still up on the jacks. Meantime, at the front of the field then, Scott Dixon. What a manoeuvre, Nick Damon. Given what we've seen round turn one, it looks absolutely treacherous there, but full confidence on cold tyres at the restart by Scott Dixon, Nick.
Yeah, he got a great run, and he obviously trusted that Philippe Albuquerque wasn't going to try and run him out to the outside in turn one, especially, you know, at this point, and then already having been told off for his driving standards. But that's audacious. So to go there, as you say, with the tyres at best tepid, and then loop around the outside at 140 miles an hour, fantastic manoeuvre by Scott. And now he's streaking away as well. So he's really found some pace now. It's dark, it's cool, and the track is going to give up extra grip until it gets too cold.
Shea Adam, just before, I'll just get the cars across the line, and then there's a raft of penalties coming through, some of which are major ones for the teams involved. Scott Dixon then by a second and a half. GT Le Mans, Matt Campbell in the WeatherTech Porsche, side by side with BMW as he came out of the final corner. That was John Edwards, I think, that went through there. So now it's the BMW's first and second. Yes, it is. Campbell down to third, and another 5 seconds further back, Antonio Garcia trying to get back on terms in the number three Corvette. I'll keep an eye on that battle between the two BMs and the Porsche. Shea Adam, big penalties coming.
Very big penalties. Car 16, that's the Wright Motorsport Porsche that is currently in second. Trent Himmen, too many people over the wall considered working on the car. That is a drive-through and a huge penalty for John Wright's boys and girls. And also car number 22, that's the United Autosport LMP2 machine, currently running in third position. Improper final wave by, that's massive. Stop plus 3 minutes and 36 seconds. Meanwhile, the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini is back out around the track. Madison Snow reporting that there is a gearbox issue with that car. He does not have second gear, and he said every time he shifts up, it goes into neutral. That could be terminal.
Oh dear. Oh dear. Soon as you do anything bad, by the way, in the wave by, you're going to get hit. Really badly hit. Because it's such a big advantage, so you get a big disadvantage, and that's it's not really going to affect the position of the United Autosports car, because the top three are so far ahead in LMP2.
Well, there's no other cars running, so he's the final car running, and he's four laps behind Ryan Diehl in second. So, yeah, the lap he's going to lose, effectively, or another lap he's going to lose, lap and a half, is just going to be five laps behind, but still on the podium. But yeah, I wonder what they did there. I assume they took the wave by when they shouldn't, so they gained the next lap.
Exactly right. Yeah. Absolutely right. We were pretty spot on, actually, with the Prancing Horse logos. Porsche logo is the coat of arms of Weimar Germany, and the Ferrari logo, as Enzo told it, he met Countess Paolina of Ravenna after winning a race at the Savio track in 1923, and the Countess told Ferrari to add the logos to the cars, insisting the logo would bring good luck.
That would be on Alfa Romeo, wouldn't it?
Yeah, correct. World War One Italian fighter pilot Francesco Baracca had it on the side of his plane.
And the one race they didn't have it on the car, the driver got killed.
Alex Goldschmidt, thank you for firing that in.
Yeah, I've heard this story. Yeah, they did. Whilst it obviously wasn't, it was lucky because drivers got killed at the time. One time they didn't have it inside the car, there was a fatality, unfortunately.
Timothy Puret out of the infield care centre, evaluated and released after that huge accident and the rollover right on the arm core. Slightly complicated, I think, by the fact that was pretty close to one of the cutouts, the alternative track layout there. So the banks of tyres and the concrete, then there's just a single layer of arm core, double, maybe even triple high, but just arm core and nothing behind it and no catch fencing, because it's taken away when they use other options here. So that could have been much, much worse indeed, with that car getting up onto the tyres and rolling over. Thankfully, everybody all right. So, front of the field, 3 seconds between Scott Dixon. He's cleared off. Ollie Plart now in second position for Mershank Acura. Philippe Albuquerque in third for the other Acura. Huffaker from DL, but there's a lap there in Pierre-Juan Matheson's favour. Wayne Boyd has read a couple of chapters of his book in the penalty box and now rejoins for United Autosports number 22.
The ever-changing colourways.
Of course he was. That's exactly what he was doing. John Edwards passed Matt Campbell, as we mentioned when it happened at turn 17. So the two BMWs, first and second, although there's 4 seconds between them now. And the WeatherTech Porsche still in third position, 5.5 seconds ahead of Tonio Garcia for Corvette. Only now 0.8 of a second between first and second, and the two Riley cars in the LMP3 category, with another 9 seconds further back, Stephen McAleer trying to get back on terms with them in the Duquesne for 47 Motorsports. That's a decent scrap going on there for all three of the podium positions. And in GTD, Zachary Robichaud for Pfaff Porsche, by a second from Trent Hindman for Wright's Motorsports Porsche, and then 7.5, 8 seconds back, Frank Montecalvo for Lexus.
Well, big loser, in a way, is Ollie Jarvis and the Mazda team, which prior to that yellow flag have been leading quite easily, really, haven't they, for the preceding hour and a half or so. But they've dropped down to fourth. They're 7 seconds off the lead. They're behind both the Acuras and the Cadillac of Chip Ganassi Racing. So of the cars that have run relatively trouble-free, or relatively incident-free, should we say, they're now at the back, and that's a complete turnaround from just before that last yellow flag, John.
Yeah, and you just don't know, do you, how things change. A Porsche keys to the race, be there in the dark, but when you're there in the dark, you've got to have the weapons with which to fight. You've got to have the tools in your toolbox. That's a car that's going to work well in the cooler temperatures. A setup that'll energise the tyres. Remember that there's no tyre choice in terms of compound and construction for DPI. They're all the same. Sun Energy 1 car with a left rear light cluster not working. That's Grenier behind the wheel of that car. He's been doing great work. And they are now just a lap away from getting back on the lead lap. It's not even really that now, is it? They are charging at the moment. 2 or 3, 8 last time around. Spencer Pumpelly put in. So was there a little mistake there? Yes, there was. Just went off at turn one. Sparks flying from underneath Grenier's car. And did he pick up one of the advertising hoardings? Not quite, but threw a whole handful of dust at Jack Hawksworth, who is another couple or three laps behind. Madison Snow now down to eighth position after that gearbox issue and back in the pits. Still yet to emerge. Shea Adam, I thought I saw a penalty for the right motorsport car for too many people over the wall.
There is active discussion in the pit box, the number 16 pit box for Wright Motorsport. They're arguing their side of it. So while they argue, Trent Inman is allowed to continue out around the track. But the good news is that because they pulled it off of the race control channel, it doesn't mean that Trent will be black flagged after passing start finish three times without serving the penalty in effect.
Sorry, Nick, go ahead.
We're obviously saying that whoever the extra person was, be it, you know, Barry or Gladys, was actually just looking, wasn't actually helping with the mechanicing. There's obviously they're going to need to find some stills. It's such a shame people are actually doing the work, aren't they?
Well, I know, as soon as you go over the wall, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You're only allowed a certain amount of people, and you can't go over the wall until the car's standing still either. So,
well, they've written more than permitted, number over wall, consider working on the car. So, as you say that, yes, if you're over the wall, you can still work in the car.
Correct.
The argument must be that person wasn't working on the car. So, if they can prove that, which is a long conversation, which would probably end in the same situation, same penalty being applied.
2 hours and 15 minutes to go. A reminder, as we mentioned earlier, and thanks again to the official sources who, when we were talking about this, confirmed it for us. Drive time infraction for the 48. I believe that's now been mentioned by Jimmy Johnson on the TV coverage in the NBC as well. So that means, as Shea said at the time that we were talking about it, it will finish last in its class, whatever happens. So, suppose, Shea, you could just park the car up now, couldn't you? You're not going to do any better.
Not quite sure why they kept Paginet on board, but they recognise as a problem. Mm. Unless it's a standard penalty, like, you know, if you're 1 minute over or the entire race over, it's still the same.
It's any of the drive time penalties results in what Shea was saying. You get thrown to the back of your class. And in fact, we saw somebody at Road Atlanta. I can't remember if it was the 6 hours or Motul Petit Le Mans at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. They realised that they'd messed up and couldn't get in because of a yellow flag. And as we said at the time, I think I would have taken the penalty for entering a closed pit to change the guys. And they stayed out. And then, once they realised what had happened, they just parked the car. Who was that, Shea? Can you remember? It was a Michelin Pilot race,
oh,
I think.
Oh, yeah. It was in Pilot Challenge. It was Carbon. Jeff Westfall and
well
Tyler
done.
McQuarrie.
Well done.
And Jeff wasn't going to get enough drive time. And so by parking the car and having a DNF, they weren't thrown to the back of the class. They were able to finish ahead of the cars that DNF'd, if you see what I mean. They would have been thrown out behind all of them. So they still gained more points that way.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It was the car bomb by Peregrine machine. So it's not unheard of. That's why we were talking about it at the time. As I say, since we were talking about it, what, half an hour or so ago, Jimmy Johnson on the NBC interview saying that that has been confirmed now. Chad Knaus is getting the beers in tonight then for everybody. Nick, thank you very much indeed. I'm going to swap you out of the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre and bring Jeremy Shaw back in. I hope you've enjoyed being with us, and thank you very much Indeed, and we'll talk to you in the Michelin Pro Series coverage coming up from the 8th of April with iRacing.
Can't wait.
Thanks, Nick. Nick Damon in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre with me, John Hindhoff, Jeremy Shaw on his way back. Will be with us in a wee moment or two. Just time to tell you of our leaders in the Mazda in-race update. It's Scott Dixon leading DPI in the race overall for the 01 Cadillac from Chip Ganassi. PR1 Matheson Scott Huffaker leads LMP2 in 8th position in the 52 overall. Then it's Team RLL, BMW, Philippe Eng, GT Le Mans leader, the 25 car. That's the bright red machine, if you can see it in the darkness. Riley Motorsports, Dylan Murray in LMP3 in the number 91 Ligier. Faf Motorsports, Zachary Robichon leads the number in the number 9 Porsche in GT Daytona. It is live coverage of the Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring presented by... Oh, sorry, I turned my mic off there. It is live coverage of the annual Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring. Good to have your company. This is IMSA Radio.
IMSA Radio, your route to American sports car racing.